Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Click It Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trades sales through Diamond to retailers for December 2009. Now, we've been doing this a good couple of years now, Chris, and this was not a strong month for trades.
No, not at all. In fact, you know, over at my blog, I finally did something new, John. I've taken after your lead, and I've decided to write my own little blurb about like a top 10, but nothing in depth like you guys, like you do over at CBR. But I've decided to follow in your footsteps, so to speak. And actually, I actually blogged about some things. So it's, you know, something a little different.
Cool. I think the more people talking about the numbers, the better, because it's something that I think is often misunderstood and has a fairly big impact, obviously, on the business side of comics. If things don't sell, they don't make more of them.
Right.
And man, there are a couple of really good examples of that this time on the top trade list. And we'll get to those in a bit. Looking at the totals for the top 300 and how that kind of broke down, had some interesting stuff with Marvel taking 29.93% of the total units for the top 300, DC taking 23.82%, Dark Horse having a fairly strong month with 10.85% of the units. Now, when you look at that same breakdown of sales by dollars, it skews a bit more wildly in terms of Marvel having 37.66% of the total dollars for those top 300 trades, DC having 21.74%, and Dark Horse having 9.05%. So, you know, a couple of high-price items really kind of helped Marvel, I think, this time around have a much bigger percentage by dollar than by units, which, you know, no big surprise, no problem there.
Right. Well, it's not too often where we get Marvel and DC having that $100 price point either. Usually it's Marvel for an omnibus 1 month and then DC for an absolute for the other month, but it's kind of fun to see them both on the high max side at $99 and on the low side at $9.99.
Yeah, because we usually don't see them that low either.
Right.
So I think we're seeing some interesting stuff this time around, and I think it's getting to where those two are really starting to duke it out, which,
right,
hey, well, that's great.
Well, you know, you look at their minimum price and their max price, they're both the same, except for 99 cents for Marvel. But their average price is interesting, coming at Marvel at $25.27 and DC at $18.30.
Yeah, I think DC's doing a better job at having some of their stuff at lower entry points, but I think some of that's also the nature of the items on the list.
Right.
Marvel has mainly newer stuff with only 17 of the 67 items are reorder, so they had 50 new items. But out of the 80 items that DC had on the list, 58 of them were reorders and only 22 were new items.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of those reorders are going to be early volumes of Vertigo titles, which tend to have those lower price points.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's paying off in spades for them. We had quite a few publishers that just had an item or two out, and therefore, you know, under a percent or so in sales. But, you know, I got that email you sent the other day. I have adjusted my my categories and stuff over on the right side of this sheet. And moved a few things around. Now, the
you want to explain what that email was?
The email you had sent me, as you well know, but our listeners don't, was a posting that Chris Ryle had put up. He is the head honcho over at IDW. And they had gotten into the top four for the market share. And congratulations to IDW for doing that. I do think IDW is a very good publisher, and one definitely to watch. They've got a great lineup of licensed titles, some original material, And, I mean, just the volume of stuff they're coming out and the quality of it. I mean, I'm enjoying their Star Trek stuff, their some of their Doctor Who stuff. So definitely want to congratulate them on that.
And their library of classic American comics, too. They've got a bunch of classic stuff. So yeah. they're really diverse.
Well, and again, we were talking last time about the G.I. Joe, the Transformers. I mean, they've just they've got a lot of properties, and they're doing good stuff with all of them. Mm-hmm. But to put them in the quote-unquote big four, as the posting of that blog entry was, I'm sorry, right. I just can't do that.
Right. Well, no, and Bob mentioned that, too, when I had that, too. But I just put it in there as the four because of what we do here on the spreadsheet. That's all I was implying.
Oh, I know.
You know, but it's they're all, you know, Marvel and DC, they're the 800-pound gorillas in the room. But to see IDW, you know, but, well, let me put it this way. Dark Horse and Image has really been 2 and 3.
Yeah.
So it's really good to see IDW, you know, they're not going to knock Image off, and, you know, that's for sure. And I wouldn't be surprised if Image reclaims their spot after 2010. You never know.
Well,
but
well,
it's good to see that IDW is making strides and getting bigger.
But they're certainly giving
and
Image.
Boom could make a big jump next year too.
Yeah, no, I think Boom, IDW, and Dynamite are the ones to watch.
Oh, they are. Yeah.
But it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was implying. That Dark Horse and Image better look out.
Oh, certainly.
There are things in their rearview mirror coming up very quickly.
Well, I don't think they should be looking in their rearview mirror at the moment.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the combined dollars on the trades and the comics for the top 300 of both, IDW ranked third.
Mm-hmm.
And now the numbers Chris Ryle was mentioning on his blog was the overall market share. That includes magazines and other stuff. I'm looking at just the totals for the top 300 comics and trades here. And they beat out Dark Horse by over $100,000, actually over $120,000. And Image by, you know, a significant margin. We'll say 300,000 ish. Hard to do the subtraction here, just off the cuff.
Right.
But you know, they've this month surpassed in terms of the total for the top 300 on the comics and trades.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because over on the comics side they came in fourth. Over on the trade side they came in sixth. But because they've got a good balance of material. You know, it's 66% of their total income from the top 300 trades and comics came from the comics, 33% from the trades. I mean, that's a fairly even split. You know,
right.
Obviously 2/3 to 1/3, but still. It's much stronger on the trade side than a lot of publishers tend to be. So, I mean, in this case, I mean, they passed Image and Dark Horse by this metric.
Mm-hmm.
So
and you took Oni Press out of that so-called minor league system, which
yeah.
is probably the best, you know.
Well, for me, the major league is Marvel and DC. These guys are just playing at a different level, and there's nothing right or wrong about that, okay? But the minor league, I've got Boom, Dark Horse, Dynamite, IDW, and Image. And these guys are very, very strong publishers. To call them, you know, small press, I think, is inaccurate. But they're also, again, not at the Marvel DC leagues.
Right.
And then we've got a couple in, again, what I've put in the farm team. And the main one I moved out was Oni. They just don't have a regular output to kind of justify keeping them in that minor league. And there are a couple mm-hmm. that, you know, I need to start looking at how these companies have been doing on a regular basis as to maybe a few more should be getting into that minor league than I'm giving credit. Possibly Avatar, possibly Zenoscope.
Mm-hmm.
Again, looking at the dollar values they're doing. But even that, I think, is a little bit of a stretch, because if you look at that combined total, none of these in the what I've got is the farm league or whatever
mm-hmm.
are even coming close to the minor league, much less any of those coming close to the major league.
No, I mean, Avatar had just over 161,000, Zenoscope 146,000, and then Boom Studios coming in at you know, 538,000, just above that. So, yeah, they're not even really coming close.
Yeah. And again, I use this just for kind of my own barometer and
mm-hmm.
sort of a, what rule set are they playing by? Because I think the smaller press in what I'm calling the farm league, and I mean nothing derogatory by that, but just these are people who are more doing it because of the passion and the love of it, and they've got, you know, a smaller lineup of titles, a more focused lineup of titles, and in many cases are, you know, creator titles.
Mm-hmm.
Cartoon Books is one of these that actually I'm not sure if they've put anything out lately.
Well, no, they're Wrestle number 5 or whatever it is, or 6, was supposed to come out in October. And if you go to Jeff Smith's website, it still says due out October 2009. It's like, dude.
Wow,
you know,
come on. That's unfortunate.
I know. It's very unfortunate. I know Smith is a busy guy, but come on. And you know what? I said that on my podcast. Wrestle was supposed to be going monthly or bi-monthly or something like that instead of once every 5 months. But, I mean, issue number 1 came out early 2008 or late 2007, if I'm not mistaken.
Long enough ago that I've forgotten when. Yeah, I mean, that was ages ago, I think.
Ages ago. And that was supposed to be a 30-issue series or something like that.
Yeah. But I mean, that's a one-title shop, if you will. Abstract Studios with Echo right now, same sort mm-hmm. of thing. And those guys are just working on a different playing field, I think, than a Marvel, a DC, or even a Boom, a Dynamite, a Dark Horse, you know. It comes down to, do you have a title, or do you have a marketing department, or, you know, do you have a company jet?
Well, can an independent guy like Terry Moore in Abstract Studios, you know, make $35,000 a month to cover all of his costs? I mean, he's got to be doing something else. I mean, I've interviewed Terry for the show, but, you know, that doesn't seem like a whole lot of money one comic book.
This is not how much he's making a month.
Right.
That's true.
What I mean to say is, can Abstract Studios, I guess, can they survive on just making that? I mean, we don't know what their expenses are. You're right.
But no, I wasn't even talking expenses. This is cover price.
Right.
They're only getting maybe 40% of this.
Yeah.
Through the direct market. And this, again, is just, in this case, it's both comics and trades for the top 300.
Mm-hmm.
But you've also got to figure they've got the mass market outlet and, you know, any licensing type stuff they've done, whatever. This is just a small piece of the pie, I would hope.
I would hope, yeah.
But, I mean, let's face it, if you're essentially a mom and pop, you know, company and you're bringing in even a you know, half or 40% or a third of, you know, in this case, $56,000 a month,
mm-hmm.
that's still $12,000 a month. That's very viable. I think there are a lot of people who'd be exceedingly happy with that, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, I'm not trying to equate this to how much take-home money these guys are getting, because that's not this at all.
Right.
They've got to be paying for printing, they've got to be paying for marketing, they've got to be paying for, you know, all their costs.
Well, I guess, to reiterate what I was kind of getting at, can a studio survive on a one comic book, a title that they have? You know,
well, in this case, I would say, I would have no problem believing that that Terry Moore is doing, very comfortably with Echo.
Right,
I mean, these are decent numbers. I'd have to, again, look at, you know, how these totals are on a historic basis or whatever. But, you know, that's a good, you know, selling independent title. These that are down at the 2,000, 3,000 level or lower or whatever sometimes, I start to question. You know, is this really their day job or not?
You know, you bring up a good point. You know, I've kind of noticed this throughout the past year or so, but you know, Michael Turner passed away about a year and a half ago, and ever since then, you know, Aspen seems to be waning. You know, I think he was really the backbone of that company.
Well, he was the creative visionary or whatever.
Yeah, he was it.
He
was the company, right? That's what I mean. And you know, since then, you know, it's just been waning, and it's really too bad.
The fact it hadn't folded up shop, I think, is a credit to it.
True.
I mean, mm-hmm. when you're centered around a pretty much one artist, not exclusively, of course, but when the cornerstone of your company, you know, for content and everything else passes away, that's a huge blow to a company.
Right. And I say that because they have $0 this month.
I don't think they had anything come out that hit the top 300 of either the comics or trade side.
Right, right.
So, and I do not go through and routinely clean that list out of, you know, gee, these guys haven't published lately.
Oh, no, I know.
Which I should. Flip side, neither am I adding new publishers in there, and I should be doing that too.
Right.
That's something that just started as a, hey, I'm curious how these things balance out, and I need to more fully integrate it into my number crunching process to where we also have kind of that history of these publishers to see is this, you know, anomalous or not for how they're doing this month.
Mm-hmm.
Well, going ahead and diving into the top 300 trades.
Yeah.
Let's start with that top item, which is Ex Machina Volume 8 Dirty Tricks trade paperback. It did 5,033 units. Now let's stop and think about that for just a moment. 5,033 units. I kind of equate that to saying, you know, on the comic side, yeah, the top-selling comic maybe did, you know, 80,000 units or something. I mean, this is a low number for the top of the list. There are times in the past where you might not have even gotten into the top 5, possibly not even the top 10 with that.
Mm-hmm.
Not many months for the top 10, but still. This, to me, is one of the main indicators this was not a strong month.
Well, also, look at the price of this trade, $12.99. You know, it's not even like a $17 or a $23 trade. This was a very affordable trade, and it did not sell.
Let's put it this way. People are always ragging on Wildstorm as being essentially a dead imprint over at DC.
Right.
It had the top-selling trade this month.
Right.
Now, granted, that's one of their better books. I enjoy it immensely, and I'm not trying to knock either that book or Wildstorm, but nothing from Vertigo beat it out, nothing else from DC, nothing else from Marvel. You know what I mean? There are a lot of other publishers, a lot of other properties out there that, you know, could have easily outsold this had they come out that month.
Right.
So it's as much a matter of dearth of material as anything else, I think. Now, the
that's what kind of I wrote on my blog, saying, well, going into the next item, it only beat out Deadpool by, what, 912 units.
Yeah.
And that, you know, yeah, it seems tight, but, boy, if you were to ask me who would win in a sales number, Ex Machina or Deadpool, I'd say Deadpool hands down.
Well, and this was the Dark Reign volume of Deadpool for the trade.
Right.
Now, and that was down about, well, over half from the total known sales of the first volume, which was a Secret Invasion crossover or tie-in or whatever, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, Deadpool, 4,121 units, again, not strong. Those are the only two things above 3,700 units. So, we quickly... this month, we literally only have a handful of titles that sold on average more than one per store. Again, depending how many stores you think are out there. And, again, every time I say that, I am by no means suggesting stores should be ordering more trades. I am reasonably confident every retailer out there is ordering what they think they can sell, no more, no less. I mean, that's their goal, or at least should be.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes me think that the trade market is... You know, this is not reflective of an incredibly healthy, booming trade market, I guess is the best way to put that. You know, when we've got some really good material coming out and just not, you know, doing gangbusters. Now, part of that's the economy, part of that's the time of year. People are a bit overtaxed, you know, come the holidays, financially and stuff. So I'm not trying to paint this as a doom and gloom, but... You know, every time I hear somebody say, well, yeah, maybe this monthly's not doing well, but they make up for it on trades.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at this and I'm like, I don't see how.
Yeah.
You know, rank 4 here, we got the second volume of Irredeemable trade paperback doing 3,423 units. Now, that's down almost 60% from the total known sales of the first volume.
That's huge.
But that's, again, accumulated sales for that first volume.
Right.
So, I mean, the 8,424 total known sales for that first volume have accumulated over time, including 1,246 units this month, down at rank 72.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. But I think it shows that there's some potential for this to do, you know, reorder activity. And the fact that the first volume did strong reorder activity when this one came out, I see as a very good sign. This, I think, has the potential of kind of being that evergreen sort of a property for Boom, potentially. We'll see if that mm-hmm. happens or not. Now, an evergreen property I would say definitely does exist over at Dynamite is The Boys, because they had pretty much, I think, everything they have available on the list for The Boys this time around. They had the definitive edition Volume 2 hardcover with slipcase and stuff mm-hmm. at rank 136. They had the limited edition hardcovers Volume 3 and 4 at ranks 151 and 154, respectively. And they had Volumes 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 of the Heroes Trade paperbacks on the list this time. So, I guess everything but that first definitive hardcover and the first two, I guess, limited edition hardcovers. But every volume of the trade and stuff. So that, again, shows that these smaller publishers, or in this case the minor league or whatever, can definitely put numbers on the board every month just by having a strong, popular title that kind of hits that evergreen status, if you will.
You think DC regrets giving this property up?
No, actually, I really don't think they do.
Okay.
Do they regret not having the sales? Yeah, probably. Because mm-hmm. This was Wildstorm, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it certainly would have helped Wildstorm this time around.
Right.
But, you know, I think they made a decision that editorially that was not the kind of content they wanted to do. And I don't think they've really looked back since.
Right.
You know, had they... Knowing what they know now, would they have made the same decision? Maybe not, but I would kind of say, yeah, they probably still would have.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think it was a sales issue at all. And it could have been, you know, completely despite sales. They would have said, nope, not for us.
No, I don't think it was a sales thing. I think it was a content
yeah.
thing. Yeah. I mean, they dumped them after, what, 4 or 5 issues?
Something I respect like the fact that they helped transition it over to Dynamite.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
The fact of the matter is they could have just killed the property.
Right.
And they didn't, so.
Or, you know, or The Boys, yeah, right, they could have just said, started a new number one, or do whatever, or.
Well, they could have said, The Boys is no longer being published.
Right.
Period, end of story, it cannot go elsewhere.
Right.
So, they took the high road there by letting the creators and facilitating the creators taking it elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I really respect that. And, again, it's worked out well for Dynamite.
Well, you also don't want to piss off a couple of guys like Ennis and Robertson because they're very good at their craft, and you may want them back at some point to do something at DC or Wildstorm.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
no,
you know, it's funny just going on Twitter and seeing all the different artists and writers and creators and editorial staff all over Twitter – and everybody's talking to each other like it's one big fraternity, you know, because they're all friends in the industry.
Right.
But yet we as fans sometimes say, but, you know, I'm a Marvel and you're a DC kind of thing. But in reality, everybody is in the comic industry. And everybody, it's, you know, it's like Major League Baseball. You're going to be on a different team, every once in a while.
Yeah, so yeah, but there is a lot
you better get along with everybody.
There is a lot of team loyalty, though, to be had in the comic industry.
No, you're right.
And I think that's just kind of interesting how heavily brand-aware people are. You know, and sometimes that's good. Other times I think that's kind of silly.
Right.
Now, one of the ones I kind of want to talk about a little is down at rank 50. This is Reorder Activity for Chew, Volume 1. It did another 1,472 units, bringing it up to 7,806 total known reported units. Now, how much of the success of this title do you think might be due to it having had that preview in Walking Dead when it started out?
I totally agree with you. Well, I think I said last time on the show that Chew Volume 1 was in my top 10 books of the year.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah, and, you know... not only because of the great price point, but this is just a good series, and I think that Image is doing a bang-up job of marketing this book.
I guess my question is, had they done that sort of a push for Dynamo 5, Noble Causes, Proof, some of the other ones that had been around a while showed they had some legs to the property, yet just hadn't quite found an audience.
Mm-hmm.
If they could have been keeping some of those titles around.
Did they offer the two preview and other titles, or just Walking Dead?
I do not know. I only saw it in Walking Dead.
Okay. Because, you know, this kind of, when you brought that up just now, it kind of reminds me of what we're seeing in DC titles right now, and that is the Doc Savage Batman Spirit, what are they calling that?
First Wave.
First Wave. They're doing the First Wave, and, you know, you pick up a couple of titles of Blackest Night, and it's in every single book, or JSA All-Stars or something like that, and it's like, God, you know, I wish they wouldn't, you know, throw it in my face off of every single title I'm getting.
Right.
And so it's good to see, you know, hey, if you want to check out Chew, go to this title and pick it up in a way.
Well, I just got to wonder if, I mean, Walking Dead is the best-selling ongoing title of the Image Central line.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to suggest it gives the title an unfair advantage, or Chew in this case, by having been promoted there. I don't think that's unfair at all. Certainly it is an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
But one, maybe they should be doing that for more titles more often.
Mm-hmm.
And two, isn't that kind of reeking of, you know, Kirkman, who's in theory trying to help everybody publishing through Image Central, playing favorites?
Yeah, I know where you're going.
You know, I'm just, I say that because, again, I've seen, you know, Proof is ending at 28, Noble Causes ended at 40, Dynamo 5 is still ongoing, but I think could use a bit of a push.
Mm-hmm.
And these are just titles I'm enjoying from Image. There are plenty of others that I think also would have benefited from that sort of, you know, spotlighting.
How did they promote Image United? Do you know?
Two-page house ads in pretty much every Image book I think I was reading.
Okay.
I don't know that they did a spotlight like they did for Chew. Oh, I take it back. They did the four backup stories or whatever that cycled through Savage Dragon, Spawn, Witchblade, and maybe Invincible.
Okay.
But, I mean, do they really need to be pushing Image United, Haunt, some of these others that have big profile people on them? Or should they be trying to build up a successful line of new creators over at Image? It just seems to me that you've got, you know, Walking Dead, you've got Invincible, you've got Spawn, you've got Savage Dragon, you've got a couple of long-term things, but they're all partner books.
Mm-hmm.
And for one, a company that was founded on creator rights, kind of helping the little guy out, if you will, for them to have gone from the David to the Goliath is a little unfortunate. You know, and I would like to see them kind of taking the Jay Farbers and, you know, some of these other creators that are trying to go through them and trying to be successful and to help them out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's, I don't know, it's just a little disappointing. Another one that I found a little disappointing because it's just a great book. And it was actually one that they were just talking about not too long ago, I think, over on Around Comics. Down at Rake 78, we got the Mighty Volume 1 trade paperback. 1,191 copies. And this is by Pete Tomasi. He's doing some great stuff here. It's, you know, what if the Superman hero of the universe wasn't totally on the up and up? And, I mean, I'm loving this book, and here it is, well under, you know, or a bit under 1,200 units.
You and Bob covered this in a weekly spotlight, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
I thought so. You guys really like this book.
Oh, yeah. I think it's great. And the way it was phrased over on Around Comics, I think really, you know, hit it on the head of this is going to be the kind of thing that people discover in a couple of years saying, wow, I didn't know this great book came out back when.
Right.
And that's just such a shame. Because if more people had discovered it now, it would have stuck around.
This isn't in the DC universe, though.
No, it is not, and I think that was part of what killed it.
Right.
They solicited it in the DC universe part of previews, but it was often its own reality.
Right.
So people who would have picked it up had they realized that were scared off by it being in the DC section, and people who were going through the DC section were kind of put off by the fact that it wasn't in the DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a case where I think they positioned the book poorly. They kind of marketed it to death almost.
So it should have been like in a Wildstorm universe, you think?
Well, I'm not going to say that would have helped it.
Yeah, exactly. So,
of course, Flipside, Wildstorm had the top-selling book this month, so, you know, or Kyra Trade or whatever. So, I think it would have done better over there just because it would have at least avoided that confusion. They, at the very least, should have a clearly other section of the I mean, it shouldn't be in between, you know, JSA and Titans or something, you know, or wherever it was.
Well, they're trying to squeeze in the Red Circle characters.
But that's set in the DC universe.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. They're trying to squeeze them in. And I don't know if that's going to help sales or not. You know?
Well, I think that's a
The Fly hanging out with Batman or someone like that. I mean,
it's funny because the Shield is selling better than the Web, but I like the Web much better.
The Web, yeah.
Both have been integrated fairly smoothly into the DC universe. I think the mistake was to use the Red Circle branding to begin with. They should have just snuck these in as if they're just new titles. And not, hey, we're taking this other brand and cramming it into the DC universe. Because between doing that with the Red Circle stuff, the Milestone stuff...
That's it, the Milestone. That's another, yeah.
And there was like, one other group they were doing that with. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the problem here isn't the characters and stuff that the DC has. They don't need to be purchasing other libraries to make up for really lame ideas or characters of their own. They've got Superman, they've got Batman, they've got Wonder Woman, they've got Flash, they've got Green Lantern, they've got some excellent characters that have name recognition, you know, unsurpassed. And while it's cool to be bringing in all these other characters... The underlying message it sends is maybe the problem they were having sales-wise is they didn't have the right characters. And I disagree with that. And again, here was a case where a new property comes along that I think had, you know, more longevity to it than we've seen and will ever see. Because I give Tomasi a lot of credit. The Mighty ran for 12 issues and you get a complete story there. You know, he closed that off nicely.
So the Mighty is done.
The Mighty is done. Okay. We will have a second volume to finish off the 12-issue run to collect that. But he realized it wasn't going to continue, and he ended the story gracefully. I'm sorry he had to, but I appreciate the fact that he gave us a resolution and didn't leave us hanging.
Well, I'm going to have to pick that up. Now you really piqued my interest, so...
Well, it's funny because Irredeemable is, you know, we talked about that. It's doing better. This is a similar sort of concept, fairly different execution. And if you take Irredeemable as sort of a Justice League book where Superman goes bad, The Mighty is kind of sort of a World's Finest where Superman has gone bad and the Batman guy is just a regular cop sort of a character.
Right.
It's just... Excellent execution by Tomasi. You know, I do not think he's gotten enough credit for that, and I think that's one that over time people are going to, like I said, clue into that and think, you know, wow, I should have been getting it back when.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because, and you mentioned it before, but Irredeemable Volume 1 got the reorder just in front of it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think people who like one would probably like the other. But, man, talk about a difference in how they market it.
Mm-hmm.
Irredeemable Volume 1, $9.99 price point. Mighty Volume 1, $17.99.
Right. Well, that's why I said up above at number 1 with Ex Machina at 13, you know, $12.99. You know, so I don't know what DC is doing. They're all over the board.
Well, think about this though. Suppose you've heard great things about both Irredeemable and the Mighty. The basic concept, you know, intrigues you. You look at them on the shelf. The art looks, we'll say, you know, you find them equally appealing, whatever. So, basic concept and stuff you like. All other things being roughly equal. In other words, you haven't read them, so you don't know which you would like better. Which are you more likely to pick up? Mm-hmm. That first volume of Irredeemable at $10, or that first volume of The Mighty at $18?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to pick up Irredeemable. And this goes to where Boom not only has strong editorial, they've got really strong marketing. You know, this was a smart move for them to have that at that price point, particularly when you realize that second volume of Irredeemable back up at rank 4, $16.99. They are trying to get people with that first volume hooked. And that's just
right.
A smart move.
Right.
And I guess DC had realized they were canceling the title and therefore there was no benefit to them doing that for The Mighty Volume 1. But it's still disappointing.
Well, and we mentioned 2. You think 2 Volume 2 is going to be at $9.99?
Oh, certainly not.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah, it's just, it doesn't make sense to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it'd be nice to see them, Marvel and DC, taking this approach with the monthly comics. How many times do we see a monthly comic that starts at $3.99 and then drops to $2.99?
Right.
Yet there's no clue of that when you're ordering or looking at that first issue. So a lot of times, I personally am thinking, well, you know, $3.99, if I like it, I'll get it. But I know there are other people who are thinking, wow, this is $3.99. It may be that for the entire run, therefore I'll skip the first issue. You skip the first issue, you're probably not going to get the second issue, even if it is $2.99.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it had been a $1.99 first issue, that much easier to get the first issue. You get the first issue, you're liable to get the second. We're seeing that action on the trade side. Why aren't they following through with that on the monthly comics?
Well, and you got to give DC a little bit of credit because Fables Volume 1 coming in at rank 103 is at $9.99.
Well, and I think that was one of the contributing factors to Fables' success.
Right.
It was easy to get on board with the trades.
And look how many issues they're up to now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Spinoff series and, you know, novels that they're bringing out, so, yeah.
Well, I mean, right now it's supporting two and a half monthly books.
Mm-hmm.
2 monthly books and a miniseries. And I half expect when the Cinderella one ends, they'll spin up another one.
Oh, probably, yeah.
If they can keep up the quality, they should.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why wouldn't they? Now, we're seeing quite a bit of Green Lantern stuff on the list this time around. No big surprise. Now, one of the ones that I think was really kind of interesting, pretty sure this was a Wildstorm book, not 100% positive, but almost 100% positive, rank 146, Mirror's Edge Trade Paperback. Now, I think I've actually ordered the back issue. Yeah, I picked up the 6-issue miniseries and back issues cheap at maybe Comic Collector Live or somewhere, because the art looked intriguing. It's based on a video game. I'd have to look up how those comics sold, but this trade, which was originally released on December 2nd, therefore first came out during the month we're looking at the numbers for, it sold 636 units. 636, period.
Mm-hmm.
Initial month of release. Granted, it's $20 trade paperback. Seems a little expensive. But I don't care how many stores you think are out there. That's well under an average of a copy of store. Again,
oh, yeah.
It makes sense. But that means there's that little demand for this sort of a book. Now, it costs DC relatively little to put something like this out in trade. They already had the content. They already had it digital. All they had to do was slap a cover on the trade, solicit it. As long as it didn't tank, which you could argue whether it did or didn't at this number, I'd kind of lean towards maybe it did.
Mm-hmm.
They could have just said, hey, it's not worth doing. But at least they hit the minimum threshold order they needed to, et cetera, et cetera. If those thresholds really even apply to DC, and they probably don't, since Diamond is a sales broker, not a distributor for them. But this, to me, is one of the proof of the pudding sort of a thing, that it matters how things do on the monthly side, because that's reflective of how they may wind up doing on the trade side. And if they have legs, they may get the reorder activity and that longer lifespan on the trade side. But, man, if they're just not hooking on the comic side, is there any reason to think they're going to suddenly do that, become a sleeper hit on the trade side?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never even heard of this. I'm not a video game guy. And just looking at the creators, John, do you even know who these people are?
I
have no idea.
Look at the solicit real quick. Hang on,
Lisa. And I don't even know if it did come out. You know, it probably did come out monthly, but...
I know it did.
It did.
The names don't ring any bells to me.
Yeah.
But to me, the art looked kind of cool. I thought about getting it when I saw it in previews, but, gee, I'm not a gamer, needed to cut back, whatever, so I didn't.
Right.
But again, I've since picked up the six issues. For a fraction of the price, that trade would have cost, even at a discount through DCBS.
I wonder if the game was a big seller.
I don't recall. It had some really good ads.
You know? Huh.
But I don't know that people who are hooked on a game are the least bit likely to go pick up a comic book based on it.
Or vice versa. You
know? I think people are more likely to pick up a game based on a comic if they're into the comic.
Yeah.
Than pick up the comic if they're hooked on the game. But I don't think there's huge overflow, you know, or a huge bump in sales in either direction happening. Now, we got some reorder activity for Final Crisis down at rank 170. This is the hardcover. We got another 537 units, putting the total known sales of that hardcover at 13,697 units. I'd like to say that's not bad, but for a huge event, you know, theoretically earth-shattering, earth-changing, or relevant DC event, pretty unimpressive.
Mm-hmm.
But nice to see.
But it's probably going to be one of the top sellers of the year.
I don't see how.
Well, do you want to jump ahead real quick and look at those, or not really? Not right now.
I have not even crunched those. I do have the data for the year. But right here, we've got the total known sales at 13,697 units, and I would suspect there's a decent amount that did well above that this year.
True, yeah.
I mean, almost how could it not? Now, let's put it this way. Anything that even at the bottom of the list is there every month, that's going to have, we'll say, a minimum of 300 or 400 a month. Times 12, that's, you know, 4,000 or 5,000. So if it had an initial release as well during the year, that the likelihood of it bouncing above this are pretty high. I mean, it'll be on the list.
Yeah.
But that's only because the list went down to 500 units this time. Or 500 okay. items, I mean. Instead of just the top 100 or 300, they provided the top 500 items on the trade and stuff for the year. So it's part of why I haven't gone through it yet. It's a big list. List bottoms out this time around at 317 units. That's a bit lower than usual, but sometimes it does get down to the 300-400 units. But this goes back to kind of a lackluster month in terms of sales.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of reorder activity on the list. We've got, how many total reorder? We have 115 reorder items, so well over a third of the list. Now, one reorder activity I thought was kind of interesting was at rank 253, and that's 366 units of reorder activity for the Absolute Sandman Volume 2. Not often you see Absolutes doing reorder activity like that.
Right.
But Sandman, gee, go figure. So, again.
Well, the other two big books that came out for Marvel, the Tomb of Dracula Omnibus Volume 2, and that was supposed to come out in October, but was pushed back for whatever reason. And the Daredevil Omnibus Volume 2 by Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev came in.
Right.
So both of those doing over 1,000 units.
Yeah.
Which I think are pretty good to see, actually, for books like that.
I think so, too. You know, there are a couple of Masterworks that did pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Up at rank 32, we've got that second volume of Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., did 1,834 units. I picked that up. Loved the first volume of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the Golden Age Submariner down at rank 49. It did 1,478 units. And then we've got the Rocketeer from IDW at rank 52 with the deluxe edition of the Complete Collection hardcover, 1,456 units. And up at rank 8, we had the regular hardcover for the Complete Collection doing another 2,457 units.
Mm-hmm. That deluxe one is sold out. I mean, it was under-ordered and, you know, didn't the low print run and everything. And actually, I got an email from IDW and Chris Ryle saying it is gone and doubtful if they're ever going to reprint the deluxe version.
Well, I'm glad I got that copy then.
I got my copy, I know.
That had to be a hard one for stores to order.
Yeah.
I mean, I was on the fence as to which version to get and opted for the deluxe one. But at one point, I had actually put down the other one initially on my order.
Well, on that Wednesday, when it came out, I know a bunch of people blogged about it, how great it was, and, hey, this is great. I'm so glad I ordered it. And, you know, Augie DeBleek had a nice posting about it. And I'm like, you know, I didn't pre-order this. I better go find it. And I found a copy on Barnes & Noble. And I know guys like Chris Parton was out there looking for it, and, you know, we couldn't find it. And looking on eBay, they were selling for $150. And, you know, I immediately wrote Chris Ryle, and I'm like, you know, what's going on with this book? And he's like, yeah, man, nobody ordered it. I'm like, do you have any copies? Can I buy one from you? And he's like, no, I can't. I have no copies.
Man, that's got to be frustrating for them.
Yeah.
Put out such a cool product like that, not have it ordered in the amounts that obviously it should have been ordered in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, still, I think the numbers it did are not bad, but for it not to have completely fulfilled the demand that was out there is just so unfortunate. And it's the kind of thing that maybe if there was some way to shorten the cycle time between ordering and delivering and stuff like that,
right?
We could prevent undersell situations like that.
Well, and, you know, it kind of brings up a good point of why wouldn't they reprint it? And the answer is really, is there that much demand for a reprint of this book? And probably not.
Well, what it would have cost them to print, say, another 500 copies versus what it would cost to do a second printing of 500 copies.
Right.
There's a big difference there.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this is part of why Bob and I do the preview spotlight every month, is to let people know about these things when it's time to order them, to where you can make sure to let your retailer know you want them so they can order it, they can get it, and they can get it to you.
But you're only going by what preview says. I mean, what really sells a book is word of mouth. And when a book like this comes out and people are blogging,
understood,
and putting up pictures saying, hey, what a great book this is, I'm so glad I have it.
But when is that word of mouth most effective? When it's come out and already impossible to find, or
it's in this previews? This book sold out. It sold out in 2 days. This book was selling on eBay Friday after the Wednesday it came out.
Understood. But that's part of why Bob and I talk about these things on the preview spotlight a couple of months in advance. Are we going to have the thing in hand to give all the cool, you know, here's why you've got to get it? No, of course not.
Mm-hmm.
But we're at least trying to alert people about it to where when all these other podcasts do talk about it once they've got a copy, you're more likely to have already gotten it on order.
Well, that's why I think my podcast is pretty good, not to toot my own horn, but I try to get editors on there who want to talk about their product. I mean, you get an artist or writer on it talking about Blackest Night. They did Blackest Night a year and a half ago. They're on other projects. If you listen to guys like Mike Norton, you know, and when he's on Around Comics, I mean, it's so funny. I mean, Mike's a great guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when Chris and Tom and Sal are talking to him about a project that they just grabbed off the rack, he's like, remind me about that again. You know, what
yeah.
did I do in 52 or, you know, or Trinity? What did I do in Trinity? You know, he's like, I have to look at that page again. You know, it's just comical because it's new for us, but it's old for these guys. But an editor and a publisher, you know, these are coming out this week, and he wants to get as much exposure for his books as possible. That's why I think it's more, in a way, it's more fun to talk to editors. Like, I just had Kim Thompson on my podcast, mm-hmm. and he was out there. He was talking up books left and right. Hey, go out and buy this. This is what's coming up for us.
Well, but again, that's part of why we try to talk books up at the ordering stage.
Right, exactly.
You know, I've always thought that there are multiple times to push a book, and when it's being solicited in previews is one of them. Certainly when it's on the rack is the other one.
Because
you got to hit both times.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter how effective you are when it's on the rack if too few copies are on the rack. And again, while I commend IDW for having sold out of that, I go back to that's got to be really frustrating for them to know they could have sold more.
Right.
So.
That's the give and take, right?
Yeah. Nature of the beast. You know? And the way to correct that is, as readers, we just need to communicate to our retailers, this is what we're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
The more informed they are, the better they can have what they need in the store. And the happier everybody is.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What else we got? Anything else?
Nothing that looks overly exciting. I was going to do a quick...
Marvel Zombies is back at number 7.
Yeah, well, we just can't get rid of the zombies. Jeez. Yeah.
Dark Horse is the Goon. That place pretty high at number 9.
Yeah, but this was a month where it didn't take all that much to rank in the top 10.
Right. That's true.
You sell 2,400 copies, bam, you're solid. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not trying to say that, but the bar was a bit lower this time around.
Are you surprised? I mean, you know, 8 months ago, we were looking at all the, not even 8 months ago, maybe sooner than that, we were looking at all the Secret Invasion trades, and now we're getting all the Dark Reign trades, and they are just not selling as high.
Difference between Secret Invasion having been an actual event,
mm-hmm.
and Dark Reign being a branding,
yeah,
a banner that stories were under but not really part of.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a Dark Reign story so much as a theme, and with Secret Invasion there was a much clearer story to be part of,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that they have not really duplicated that success of the Civil War line of trades and stuff like that, you know, I think is a bit telling.
You think that'll change with Siege?
No.
No? Siege is just another brand?
No, that's an actual event.
That's an event? Okay.
But they're marketing it as finally it's over. I mean, seriously.
It's over. Marvel's folding tent.
Well, I mean, they're saying this is the end cap of a 7-year-long, you know, in-the-making saga.
Right.
Versus, well, what the hell is it?
Right.
So the way they're marketing it, I think, doesn't bode well. Marvel's events have not been doing as well as they had been. But, mm-hmm. I mean, Civil War was both an unprecedented success and an unrealistic one to duplicate.
I like Civil War overall.
Oh, I liked it, but sales-wise...
Yeah. Yeah.
It did much better than it had any right to do, than any event had any right to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we're starting to see that sort of success to a degree, not to that level, but that nature of success over on Blackest Night, where we're seeing titles, granted part of that's due to the promotional power rings, going up 4 or 5 times in sales, makes me think that DC's kind of stolen Marvel's thunder to a little bit here. Now, I think Marvel's trying to steal it back,
mm-hmm.
and in actually a fairly funny and potentially clever manner, they're giving away a variant cover of Siege or whatever to any retailer that will send them, I think $200 worth of covers, stripped covers, from the comics that were part of the promotional Power Ring stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got spare copies of Rebels, whichever issue it was, I forget off the top of my head, they'll, you know, and you send $200 worth of those covers at cover price or whatever, you'll get this exclusive variant or what have you to help promote Siege.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
I don't know how successful it'll be, but they're trying to make the point that people over-ordered those issues to get the Power Rings, etc.
Right.
That's a valid point. But the rings are cool, so I'm okay with it.
I got my Power Rings, by the way.
Awesome.
Finally got my rings.
Yeah. I got them, and I'm going to order the light-up set in previews in January.
I think you're talking me into that, yeah. Okay, my local comic book store selling the rings for $3.99 each.
Yep, one of the stores here was doing that.
Oh,
it was funny because people were telling somebody, the owner of another store, that one store was doing it, and he's like, "Here, you want some? I'll give you some."
Yeah.
And this guy was giving them out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually where I got it's Tribe Comics here in Austin, Texas. They were doing that. That's where I got a set when I bought the stuff through DCBS, but I got a spare set, or two actually, through Tribe Comics. Because I asked, you know, how much are you selling them for? He's like, "Yeah, come over, I'll give you one." It's like, mm-hmm. Okay, I'll be right over. And of course, I can't go into a comic store without spending money, and they've already gotten a couple hundred of my dollars.
Right.
As a result of the few dollars, I mean, less than probably $2 total of plastic they gave me, you know?
So are they doing that for everybody or just you because you're a valued customer?
Prior to that, I don't know that I had spent money in that store.
Okay.
But, I mean, Eric and Roy used to work at the store where I had spent tons and tons of money before going to DCBS. So mm-hmm. they knew the potential of what I was. But I think they were doing it pretty much for anybody. I mean, they kind of asked that, you know, if we're going to give you something, at least pick something up. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about it, those things cost the store like 16 cents a ring. So if you buy a comic, the profit they made on that pays for the ring.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a fair exchange. I don't think it's unreasonable to pick up a comic or trade or something if they're giving you something for free. I mean, it's just...
Oh, I agree. Right.
It's kind of rude to just take the free thing and run away. But, you know, it's... You know, when I saw that one store in town was charging the $3.99, the other was giving it away, it's like, which store do I want to do business with?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to do business with a store that's not trying to take a 16-cent item and charge $3.99 for it. Yeah, that's not the sort of people I want to do business with.
I know, but sometimes it's the only game in town, which is really too bad.
If it's the only game in town, it's the only game in town, and I get that.
Know. I mean, there's other games in town, but they're just farther.
Yeah.
It's an away game.
Yeah, it's an away game. It's funny. But it does tell you something about the sort of store you're dealing with.
I know. Yeah, unfortunately, my closest store is very close to my house, so... I don't know. There are two other stores that are much, much, much better, but they're driving distance. Well, yeah. Three other stores, really.
Well, and distance is a factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, convenience is a factor. So, that's just how it goes.
Yep. What else did you want to take a look at?
I was going to talk real quick about the way the prices broke down this time around.
All right.
Out of 300 items, we had 49 that were at the $14.99 price point, 15 at $12.99, 23 at $9.99, 21 at $17.99, 57 items at $19.99, and 21 items at $24.99. The only other thing that had double-digit number of items on the list was 12 items at $29.99. So $19.99, fairly popular price point, but that $14.99, still seeing a lot of that. And actually a surprising number at both the $12.99 and the $9.99 price points. And I think a lot of that skews towards, again, the first volumes and stuff. And I really think that's a smart move for the publishers to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they should be trying to build up evergreen sort of titles that are going to show up month in, month out. We're seeing a lot of publishers having success with that. The boys over at Dynamite, potentially Irredeemable over at Boom. And I think Boom, over the next year, we may start to see some more regular items on the list, month in, month out. Mm-hmm. Just as they build up that backlog at the Disney properties and some of their other stuff. So that's pretty much what I had. Again, lackluster month on the sales.
You think that the Disney properties over at Boom are going to stay Disney?
I think there's a strong potential.
Yeah.
I think there's no reason to assume they're going to jump over to Marvel. Mm-hmm. Marvel has not had success with licensed properties for the most part. Boom is doing a smash-up job with the Mickey Mouse characters, the Pixar characters, the Muppets. They've got a very strong and viable kids line. Mm-hmm. And unless they have a major, major reason to think that Marvel can duplicate that success, they would be foolish to take it away from Boom.
I just figured, you know, bring it all in-house kind of thing.
When have they ever wanted to do that before? They've had publishing stuff in their umbrella before. And a few that even did comic book sort of things. I mean, they could have been publishing the Mickey Mouse stuff all along.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much never did in the U.S. So, for people to be thinking, oh, they're just going to bring it all in-house, they don't really have the history of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they could. I'm certainly not going to say they wouldn't or can't or shouldn't even. But I really think that's a questionable move and one I personally would not make. You know, I think it's much more viable over at Boom, given how they've created aside from, say, Archie, I would say one of the few and only viable lines of kid books.
Right.
So.
And they really just started, too.
Yeah.
You know.
I really think 2010 could be the year for Boom. Certainly IDW and Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for those three to supersede Dark Horse and Image, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope the five of them kind of duke it out in a friendly manner and really push each other to do better stuff, just as I hope Marvel and DC push each other to higher levels of success.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, the IDW deal that came down this week about Angel and Buffy and Dark Horse, that's going to be fun to watch too, I think.
What was the announcement? I hadn't heard.
Oh, just that how IDW, from what I remember, I think that IDW, the Angel series, is not continuity with Buffy anymore. Once it moved out, it's his own series. But yet, you know, they still draw on the past events kind of thing.
Ah.
But, you know, and who does Buffy? Whedon?
Yeah.
Yeah, Whedon came down and said some stuff, and then whoever's doing Buffy...
Willingham these days.
Willingham came down hard on IDW too. It's all over CBR. I'm sure people have read about it by now, but
yeah,
it's kind of interesting.
We just talked about the first Willingham issue of Angel in the Weekly Comic Spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was schizophrenic.
Mm-hmm.
There were essentially three scenes in it. I thought the first and third were brilliant. The middle one was really bad. And it was a missed opportunity for a first issue for a new creator's run.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to see both Angel and Buffy be successful, and I'd like to see them positioned to bring in fans of the TV shows further into the comic hobby.
Mm-hmm.
So what you got coming up on your show?
You know, coming up for me, the only thing I got coming down is I'm doing a review on Logic Comics, which was a graphic novel that came out in 2009. It's gotten some pretty good reviews out there, and I finally got a copy from the publisher, and I'm gonna read that. I'm reading it this weekend actually, and I'm gonna talk about it in my next show, come out Wednesday, and
cool.
So it should be fun. What about you?
Just the usual stuff. As we record this, tomorrow night we're doing the previews teleconference. As this gets released, that would have been probably last Friday. But I mention it because we're probably going to do the next previews teleconference on February 5th, most likely. But check the comic book page forums for the exact date and time. That's, again, where a bunch of us get on Skype and just talk about what's in the previews. We will have just talked, again, tomorrow night as we record this, et cetera, about the January one, but on the February 5th one, we'll be talking about the February previews. Cool. I find these to be tons of fun. Just, again, for the digressions of, you know, hey, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? You know, have you heard about this? You know, it's just the talk comics for a couple hours. It's a lot of fun. On the Weekly Comic Spotlight, on episode 126, which we have yet to record, but will have been this past Monday as you listen to this, we're talking about Suicide Squad, Siege Number 1, and Gigantic. So I gotta find some time to do some reading in the next 48 hours.
I will be listening to that one for sure. Hear what you guys have to say about Siege.
And then the following one, we're going to talk about Power of Shazam 48, Strange Number 3, and Echo 18. We may also talk about that Ed Hannigan covered one-shot through the Hero Initiative.
Oh, cool.
But, again, I'm thinking this goes up on Friday the 22nd, last Friday. In other words, tomorrow as we record this, Chris. This whole time travel thing, it's so confusing. Bob and I did a Decade in Review episode.
Oh, cool.
And we kind of talked about the first 10 years of the 2000s and, you know, what our take on some of the highlights, what was memorable, what wasn't. And no doubt we missed a lot of cool things that people will hop on the forum and say, oh, how could you have forgotten about? And it's like, oh, crap, yeah, how could we?
Right.
But that was a lot of fun to do. And then I've gotten the data for the year in review and for the Mayo report. As soon as I get that crunched, I'll let you know, and we'll schedule with Bob, and we'll talk about the top 500 comics and trades.
That'll be a lot of fun. Yeah, that's always a good episode.
Well, I'm really surprised they went to 500 items this time.
I think that's great.
I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
When I got the email of the top 100, I'm like, I emailed them back saying, are we only getting the 100, or are we getting the top 300 like last year? And they're, oh, well, this year we're doing 500. Here they are. And I'm like, damn. You know, and I really need to give Diamond a lot of credit for the improvements they've made over the last year on how they report the sales numbers. They're now in a consistent Excel format, nicely formatted and easier to use. They come out with they send us the cover images at the top, comic and trade,
cool.
Some charts. Now a lot of this I personally don't need, but you know, I respect the fact they're doing it, and I find it very handy and cool. There's still some areas I think they can and should improve on. You know, the way they do the vendor codes, getting those a little cleaner and more consistent would be good, but.
Right. Well, you mentioned Arkea and Archie having the same.
Yeah, they had problems with that. They misclassified, are inconsistent with how they do the three-letter publisher ones for IDW, for Devil's Due, for Dynamite, and it's just, I find it annoying, and because I do issue-to-issue comparisons, but I don't know of anyone else out there that's got an automated system for doing that or is even attempting to do that. I guess Mark Oliver and Paul and stuff, but I don't know how much of that they do by hand or whatever. But I guess they are doing some title-by-title stuff too, so I should mention that. But they have made some good improvements there. So. But, yeah, we've got that coming up, Weekly Spotlight. We talked about that. Year in Review, Decade in Review. Yeah, so, same old. So.
Good deal, man.
Yep. We'll, again, talk soon on the yearly one, get that up for people, and go from there. So I think that does it for this episode.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming on again. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and/or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath logic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.